Hi, and welcome to our podcast too. We're Sierra Nico College of Library Statistics. I'm here with Tatiana and Pierce. Today we're going to talk about chapters 4, 5, 6, and 7. Pierce, would you like to start us off?
Sure. First, I have a quote on page 54. It says, "Whenever an intelligence test measure is not quite the same as what we usually mean by intelligence." I picked this quote out of the reading because first I just thought it was interesting because today in our world we take a lot of tests that's supposed to like gauge your intelligence or gauge how smart you are. But in reality, there's so much many more factors that go along with it. And it was, the article was telling us about how creativity and all these tests are not they don't test your creativity level or your art level or anything like that. I could take a IQ test, but it's not going to gauge how creative I am and with my drawings or how creative I am with my music.
Think SAT is great. The SATs are a great example of that, especially because at one point it was supposed to assess how prepared you are for college. So how is a test supposed to say how prepared you're going to be for college? That can fall under mental state. That can fall under a whole bunch of things. So now, they found the test doesn't mean anything else for the industry. So I think they go a lot about money too. People wanting to, they turn things into an industry to get money for them. Things that we think we need to assess ourselves.
So chapter 4, they gave us the example about Peter and Linda, and they took the IQ test, and Linda's was 3 points higher than Peter's, and they said that Linda was above average, and Peter was below average.
And going off that, there's another quote from the page that says, "IQ is a figure with a statistical error." I also thought that quote was interesting. Because yes, they're testing your IQ level, but they can never be too accurate with it. They really never really know exactly how intelligent you are from your IQ test. And from the example of Linda and Peter, Linda she had a higher IQ, but from the average. But what really is average?
Yeah. And then they talk about normal numbers and how normal isn't 100, but it ranges from 90 to 110. So it was weird how they said Peter's IQ was low but below average, but he fell between the 90 and 110 category.
Apparently he's below average and Linda's average, well above average, but they're still in the 90 to 110 range. Then isn't that all the same? Aren't these kids still just will be the same amount of marks?
Yeah. Okay, so chapter 5 was about how people have issues interpreting graphs because of the scale or the numbers or the pictures behind the graph.
In the link that Mr. Miles provided for us, after reading it, it mostly shows scales. A lot of people will not even, when you're just a person just looking at a graph, how often do you actually look at the scale? You're looking at the numbers pretty much on top of bar graphs, on top of line graphs. You're really not looking at the scale that it's on. So if you see this huge chunk, let's say a bar graph, you see this huge chunk and then you see a smaller chunk, and maybe they're off by 3, but you're gonna assume this is far off, this is a huge difference. It's just things that people don't think about, and companies know that we're not thinking about that when we're looking at certain things.
In chapter 5, the first example they gave was, they didn't give an example, but they introduced the page by talking about how Humpty Dumpty was a math of words, and saying how he was really good with words, but in reality, people aren't good with numbers. So they talked about how people have trouble really interpreting graphs,
Go.
Okay. So again, The article talked about how people have trouble interpreting bread. So all it was saying in the paragraph how sellers of companies would use this strategy. They wouldn't particularly alter the data, but they would just change what they showed the public. For example, in the book, there was a horizontal graph, with horizontal type graph that showed very little bit of data, and like the bottom of the graph was very spacious. So what they did was they cut the bottom off to only show the important data. Also, they might companies might change the scale of a graph, so it would make it seem as though the difference was like much more dramatic than it actually would be.
I think that goes into a lot of advertising too, which we'll probably get to when we talk about chapter 7, how these companies do advertise a lot of graphs just so you can see, like visually see what they're talking about. They use it a lot in politics too, like during the campaign elections, like
yeah,
when you watch CNN, you see a lot of graphs. Like you really don't know what those graphs are saying. Like now, like even with us, like being like a high man class, sometimes I don't even know what those graphs are saying.
Like what Leah was saying with politics, on page 65, the graph, they show like the months and how the government pays people over time, and like the graph goes up and down a lot, and it shows a big different range of numbers, but you can tell that the scale is really off.
On page 62, is a quote that says, of course the eye doesn't understand what isn't there, and a small rise has become visually a big one. This goes along with picture graphs, so you can never really tell the difference. For example, if like in the book, they had a picture of a pig, was it? Like a pig picture compared to like a bigger pig picture over like the population. I don't know what it was, but you could say population over like a certain amount of years. But looking at the picture, you would think it's a dramatic increase. Well, you're looking at the picture, you would think it's a dramatic increase just because like the cow is so much bigger than the previous cow, but in reality, it could only have went up like a thousand or so.
Yeah, so pretty much what they're doing with graphs, again, is strictly lying to us or lying to whoever their target audience is. And it's not necessarily a lie, it's just making themselves look better.
Yeah, it's like altering the truth.
Yeah.
And in a way, if you think about it, like, it's lying, I guess, but it's not a bad business decision. Like, they're talking about, like, should they stop what they're doing, which I don't think they should because, I mean, it's for business.
Yeah.
So you're trying to make profit at the end of the day, so it's all about.
Sometimes, like, I guess you as a consumer or customer, you feel like I'm being lied to, but really you're not. You just got to sometimes take the time to sit down and look at it to say whether or not you are being lied to.
Okay. Now we're going to be talking about chapter 6, the one-dimensional picture. So again, this follows up with chapter 5 about how graphs work, but this is more focused on pictorial graphs and picture graphs. And the whole big idea about it was how they're more eye-appealing. So we're really not worrying about the numbers, but you're really just worrying about how the picture looked at the time.
I was reading one of the quotes that said this is true also of its eye-appealing offspring. People have gotten it down to a science to say what our brains are drawn to,
mm-hmm.
and we are definitely going to look at a picture before we look at a graph. It's less to look at. It's easier. We think it's easier to interpret. But not at all. But this is what, like, you'll see them, like you say in here, like, you'll see them in magazines and things like that, in newspapers, because it's easy for us to see, it's easier to read rather than reading a whole article. Let me just show them a picture.
Mm-hmm. And then they show, like, the small version of the picture, and then they scale it to make it look bigger, and of course you're going to look at the bigger one. And it's basically the same thing, but they'll multiply it by, like, a scale and then show you the bigger one, but you're not really getting the bigger thing.
Yeah. Also, they don't tell you what scale it's on at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have no idea. You're like, oh, this looks bigger. It could be bigger by 3, and it could be a huge picture compared to a smaller picture.
For example, in the in the book, in the passage, they were comparing the foreigners' money back to the Americans' money. So they were saying how the American had twice as much money, but from the picture, they were talking about how the dimensions of the picture were twice as wide and twice as tall.
Mm-hmm.
So it looked to be so. And so what we're thinking is, oh, they actually have four times as much as revenue than the foreigners.
Yeah, like it says how the chart is an eye appealing. So they show you how the foreigner doesn't have two money bags on his hand, but the U.S. he has two bags, and he has a bag and a saw. And then, like, well, Pierce was talking about the cow and how much different they are. They went from 1860 to 1936.
Yeah. It says that the figure should, like, one figure was twice as tall as the other, and so would have had eight times the ball for a week. So, like, that's what they're not showing you. Like, you just see a picture, and no one's going to sit there and measure a picture on a magazine.
Yeah.
We're not going to do that because, like, we want to think that they're telling the truth to us. But this compared to the graphs, I feel like this is more of a lie than the graphs are.
Mm-hmm.
Because graphs can be like, oh, I wasn't reading, I missed something. But this can really just be like, I had no idea what kind of scale this was. This looks bigger than that one. So this one's definitely more of a lie. I would feel more lied to if someone tried to use this picture graph on me compared to a regular graph.
Yeah, clearly the conflict in this would be that the pictures are just a bad representation of what the data could really show. And I wanted to ask you guys if this is like a bad way to show information, or if it's like the country still be using it. Is it too deceiving to the public?
Well, you're talking about the last one. You said that you don't think they should stop because it's for business. But if, like, you're being lied to, even though, like, it's helping someone out, like, you really don't know what you're getting. You expect to get one thing because the picture shows you something, but then when you actually get the product, you can tell that it's smaller. And, I mean, of course the company's going to lie because they want more money. But then to think about that you're being lied to just so someone can make a bigger profit off of what they're selling you, it's kind of deceiving.
Okay, so now chapter 7, the semi-attached figure. The first line is very, like, true, like extremely true. If you can't prove what you want to prove, demonstrate something else and pretend that they are the same thing. I feel like that's something that we do, like, even just to convince, like,
mm-hmm.
lies you tell whoever, like, just try to convince them. This one, this chapter falls a lot into advertising, how companies or whatever advertise things. The first couple of pages talks about, like, a drug, like a medicine to cure a cold. They're saying, like, oh, it kills this amount of germs, but then it says, like, what germs cause a cold. Like, you're not telling us what germs cause a cold. This doesn't have to be the germ that you put in the test tube, but it killed it in a certain amount of time. And then they're like, and people won't think about that, and then you throw a picture of a doctor up next to it, how many people are actually going to think about it,
mm-hmm.
which, again, is extremely true. Like, even people knowing, like, oh, this isn't a real doctor, like, saying these things, or this isn't a real doctor in a picture, someone would be like, oh, okay, so, and then it goes into, like, at the time, like, when you're sick, you're not going to think about, like, what germ is this, who is this, like, who makes this, like, and that's true, like, in the time of need, you're not thinking about it. So, yeah.
Okay, another example from the story was they start talking about the Negro polling and how it starts talking about the opportunities for Negroes and they were testing Negroes and white people and how it would benefit their.
Okay, so we all had to find a misleading graph, and the graph I found was on populations, and so this author named Jonathan Good, he was looking at a chart about where people live, and he didn't think that the chart looked right, so he figured out what scale he was using, so then he made his own chart according to, like, the correct scale that he should have used, and the numbers were off by, like, a lot. And he didn't have as many bars as the other man had. Like, there were five categories, and he only found numbers for three of them because his scale was wrong for the last two. So he was lying about how many people lived there so more people could come to that place. It didn't say where they lived, but it just said a population on where people lived and that were alive today.
So I also got mine from before. But this one is almost telling people how to read a graph that is like misleading. So I guess they made one, like how much money I guess companies on Facebook make. And so the numbers vary, but they go up and down. Again, the scale is pretty large, so again, it's hard to read. To the naked eye, to the normal person reading this, you're not going to take the time to read the scales. It's very like spread out. It goes from like December 17th to January 10th, which are way different scales. So the article is pretty much telling us like what's wrong with this graph, why companies do this. So they say it's like the most graphs are the most informative way to get out your data. But again, now that we know that companies mislead their customers and consumers, this is pretty much what the article was talking about.
Okay, for my graph that I also found on Forbes, they were showing the medal count for the Summer Olympic medal. Yeah, for the Summer Olympics. And what they did was show like pictures to show that the count number, but it's hard to really determine. If they didn't have the number, the exact number beside it for how many medals each country won, you wouldn't really be able to correctly determine which country actually won the most. It's hard to really see which medal, how many medals is represented by the picture.
Okay, another question that we were given as a group is like, what is one advantage of pretty much strategized random samples, which are pretty much picking your so-called random samples. So especially for like, again, companies, you get the answer you want. When we talked about the Yale men, they picked out certain people that graduated from Yale to say how much money they got. They know exactly who they were surveying. They already know these things before they even start their so-called random search. And then another question is like, what kind of average would you use to like measure, like compare your performance of a math class? It really depends on what you're trying to prove. Like, are you trying to prove that your students did well? Are you trying to prove that overall your students did do bad or things like that? Because when we get back to like who the average is, if you go back to chapter two. Who the average is, like when we're talking about people that work in whatever these big chain stores, the average is this middleman, but the mode is the most people. So that's whatever you want to prove. Are you, again, like do you want to take your top 1%, like your top A's or your top F's, or, like that's what you would have to prove. So in a math class, I guess you would use like your average would probably be a C student based on how many kids are in your class, and your overall class performance. Maybe you have A, B, and C, so it gets below a C, then your average kid would probably be a D. Like, your average kid isn't going to be an A unless you have a huge class, unless you're measuring, like, a huge number. So,
yeah. Or a very small number.
Or a very small number. You're right.
Okay, going off of that, another question we got as a group says, explain why advertisers often rely on small samples on a very small sample to substantiate their claims. So going off what Leah said, it's actually connected very well. Because advertisers want to do this so they can like persuade their buyers the best. For example, if the seller were to do like a survey, they would want the survey size to be very small so they can get the answers they want back. Basically, if they like surveyed small kids on like what type of candy they like, they would get back like a lot of kids would say, oh, they like candy. But if they like widen their scale or widen their sample size to like to now adults and elders, they might get different answers back that say they don't like candy. So that would just mess up their whole all the graphs and the numbers.
Okay, Can I go off of that? Like, also, like, they like to use locations. Like, you're going to get, like, people who live in rural areas compared to city areas, you're going to get way different answers. Like, especially, like, what part of the world you're in, what part of the U.S. you're in, you're always going to get different answers, and they go to the place where they know they're going to get the answer that they want.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, on page 18, how it said they filter through layers. When they do graphs, they have to pick a certain amount of people they want to do or what the topic of the graph will be. And they said, like, once they put it through, like, the statistics of the layers and everything, the decimals are different, so it makes it seem like the graphs are actually bigger than what they are. So the same thing about if you survey a kid asking candy, and then if you survey an adult about the candy, you'll get different numbers.
Okay, the next question would be, because Ruth says, what does the author mean on page 45 when he says, hardly anybody is basically normal anyway? So, when reading the passage, it began to talk about how Dr. Gazelle was doing a little study, and the study was about how it was like toddlers and infants were, if they stayed up at like a certain, they stayed up at a certain time and month, then they were considered to be normal or average. So if your kid stayed up before that X amount of months, then he would be to be advanced. And if you were to sit up later in the month, he would be perceived as being like normal or like retarded. And as parents, and the whole thing was, what exactly does average and normal actually mean? And then they compared that to flipping a coin. So when you flip the coin 100 times, you expect there to be a 50-50 chance of getting hit tails. You expect it to be 50 hit, you expect it to be 50 tails. On every flip, that's what's expected, but that's not exactly normal. So, like,
yeah.
So you really went, so the whole thing was, what exactly is normal and how does it go?
Like, when we did the dice rolls in class with the, like, loaded and unloaded, like, then you have to think about, like, with that going into a casino, like, on a way bigger scale, like, craps and things like that, what number is considered average or normal, what number occurs the most. When you do expect to get these even scales, but you know there is a number that's going to occur more than others, and, like, how do they guess that? Like, casinos have this down to science, too, like, what, they're not going to lose money. Like,